You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hello, everyone, and welcome. This week, we watched a kind of classic, I guess, from my childhood. One that doesn't get as much play nowadays as I thought it would, frankly. The Academy Award nominated for Best Picture, Babe. Best Supporting Actor, James Cromwell, as well. This movie is fun, it's charming, it's whimsical. And completely unexpected. I think it was great. I guess spoiler for about 10 minutes from now. But if you haven't seen it, I'd say, you know, dig it up. What else? Oh, first, we have live Cineprov coming up on the 17th of this month if you live in Atlanta, and I will be performing Frankenstein's Castle of Freaks, so come out for that. Also, I don't plug this very much, but we do have an Instagram, Myopia Podcast, and at Myopia Podcast for Twitter. So, yeah, follow us. I post, and we're trying to explode our following. It's a good way to share us as we try to scratch the surface. Also, if you didn't follow us last week, we were Podbean's featured podcast, so thanks for those who helped get that possible. Stay tuned for Babe.
Sophisticated, discerning young fella.
Who, me?
Yeah, follow me. Oh, boy, are you in for some fun?
What are we doing? Where are we going?
What is the Geekly Oddcast? It's a panel show of television.
I mean, seriously, where else was I supposed to go and watch Gomez Adams ride a rocket ship on a railroad track?
Gaming.
And the dice say 17.
Oh my god, 17 is Mystic Quest.
And whatever comes to mind.
Why does Zod need a starship?
Alternating Thursdays on the Geekly Oddcast.
Welcome to My Way to Finish Out. This week we watched a classic, I think, a kid's classic, Babe, the story of John Goodman turning into Babe Ruth. I'm Nick Hoffman, host of My Way to Finish Childhood, and this is actually the pig one. This is I realized I made a joke, but it's actually, there is a movie called Babe. Okay. Jesus Christ. All I thought about was Shaun the Sheep. I'm Nick, host of My Infinite Childhood and a member of Cineprov, and this is...
Hello, this is Daniel, and I grew up on a farm and frequently heard the animals talk after LSD experimentation.
I was going to say,
do you still dream about the sheep? The silence of the lamb?
I forgot the character. Oh, Clarice.
You forgot Clarice?
I forgot how the line ended. Miss Starling. I don't even know what his accent is. It goes in and out.
Dawning.
It's a good Anthony Hopkins role. I mean, duh. I'm talking about Silence of the Lambs. I'm just going to talk about my references as though people don't know my references. So we did 1995's Babe. What did you? I'm going to just ask you. Did you remember this movie? What did you think of this movie?
Yeah,
did you like it?
When I was a kid, I did. I hadn't seen it in a while. There's a couple things now that I'm wondering why they did that to use that particular technique. But yeah, I had very fond memories. I want to say I saw this in theaters, but I know we definitely had a VHS copy in my house when I was growing up.
For whatever reason, I don't think I saw this as a... Well, let's just say this. We didn't own a copy. So when I saw it as a kid, I think I saw it at someone else's house. And I think it was at a neighbor's house who was like babysitting us or something. And for whatever reason, the movie made no impact on me. I don't remember hating it. I don't remember particularly liking it. Mm-hmm. I might be confusing it with other James Herriot kind of like All Creatures Great and Small kind of things. I really enjoyed this movie this time around.
That was my reaction to the sequel. It's like, I remember that it exists and I know I've seen it, but you can stick a gun to my head and I will not be able to tell you what happened in that movie.
I mean, and there was a live action Charlotte's Web that came out.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I think we were a little older. I think maybe it was 97, 98.
The live action Charlotte's Web. Yeah, that was like in the mid-2000s.
Was it that? Wow. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, there's it's not an unfamiliar thing. I will say what surprised the hell out of me was how good this animal talking looked.
Well, they actually use a combination of CGI and puppetry. So there's like body language to the animals.
Well, and that works. I'm just like, how many movies nowadays use animal talking that looks like crap?
Oh, well, this is from a time really when people were making children's movies but actually cared.
Yeah.
I mean, most kiddie movies these days with talking animals, they're just lazy.
Now, I mean, this is kind of a discussion that would belong more on your podcast than my podcast, but you, in general, don't believe in a kid's movie per se as a concept. Now, as someone who's talking a lot about Disney, maybe your mind is changing on that. But I would say that this is a movie that aims to give children the same quality as an adult movie.
When I say things aren't kids' movies, what I mean by that is, if you're making something aimed squarely at kids, then you're not really making a movie, you're making a product, which means it's still crap anyway.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Right.
Secret Life of Pets.
Exactly. The Emoji Movie.
The Emoji Movie is a good example. I mean, and the thing is, I think what we can reference here is not just quality, because DreamWorks, I think, fucked up the whole system. Because with Shrek, because Shrek is aimed as a story at children, but it's written for adults. And so there's a lot of adult-like humor, which, I don't know, I haven't rewatched it lately. I know everyone loves the first one. I wonder how well it holds up, because when you're making such specific references, sometimes they don't date particularly well.
That's very true.
But, I mean, now everyone feels like they have to constantly make nostalgic movies, and a movie I really like that pulls this off, but is case in point, of course, is Wreck-It Ralph, which is a kids' movie aimed at millennials.
I still have not seen Wreck-It Ralph.
I'll lend it to you. I find it charming.
All right.
But I mean, when, like, the bad guys referenced are, like, Dalsim and, like, Miss Dr. Robotnik and stuff, you know.
I do remember the trailers and seeing, like, what was it, that support group for video game villains, and one of the Pac-Man ghosts is in there?
Yeah, I mean, and then, like, you know, a 10-year-old today has no idea who those are. But, I mean, and yet, we're talking about a movie that is not only aimed at kids, it's almost episodic. Like, they're little vignettes, which are very cute. It reminded me, again, of a James Herriot novel, like All Creatures Great and Small, where the doctor wanders around. Like, this, it's very cute, right?
Yeah. Plus, there's very little dialogue among the humans. It's all about the animals.
Although, Cromwell gets nominated for Best Supporting Actor for this. And
according to the Tribune, he paid for his own Oscar campaign. So,
no kidding.
So, well done, sir.
He deserved it. He was great. I mean, he, like you said, he has almost no lines. And if you've seen Shaun the Sheep as of late, I think the farmer is 100% based on him.
Oh, yeah.
Down to the sideburns, down to everything. I'm actually very charmed by James Cromwell in general. I think he's excellent. But you're right. I mean, I don't even know how to put this, but one of the first really adult big boy movies I saw was L.A. Confidential.
Oh, yeah.
And it's hard to strip that picture of him out of my mind as this lovable kind of gruff, but, you know, deeply caring man.
Yeah.
Which only comes out, what, 2 years later?
Yeah, it did.
I wonder if Christopher Plummer is going to replace Kevin Spacey in the re-release of that one, too.
Well, I mean, L.A. Confidential is satisfying because, you know, Kevin Spacey gets shot point blank by James Cromwell.
And that scene where Russell Crowe is beating the tar out of Danny DeVito.
Oh, yeah.
Is such a great scene. And it's a weird thing to say, but, like, that is such a satisfying scene. I don't know why. It's maybe because I love Danny DeVito. Didn't he also play the dad in Revenge of the Nerds?
I don't know.
Cromwell? I think he did.
Cromwell. I don't know.
Yeah. Mr. Skolnick?
I thought you were talking about the Danny DeVito play.
Could have. Just such a slimy movie. That's a movie that makes me feel dirty all over. Anyway, so give me the plot, Daniel.
Well, there's this young man who dreams of playing baseball, but he's also an alcoholic obese man. But damn it all, can he hit a ball? And he even calls me out. That's not it.
That's the other Babe.
That's the other
it's
Babe.
It's so tempting to talk about the Babe Ruth movie, which no one remembers.
It's about this pig who is part of a fair contest where people have to guess the weight of the pig, and if they get it right, they win the pig. And the pig is Babe, who's got, by the way, I'm just going to go off on a tangent here. Doesn't he have just this delightful little brown hair on top of his head that makes him look more human?
He has a little, yeah, he has like a little, like a mop of hair on the top of his head. It's very cute. He's a cute pig.
Well, anyway, a farmer Hoggett, even though he doesn't keep pigs, as he says gruffly, guesses the weight and wins the pig, and the pig is worried because he gets told that humans eat pigs. So in order to avoid that fate, he learns how to herd sheep.
It's in many ways, of course, this is probably a kid's book, I would guess.
Well, it was based on a kid's book. I remember reading one when I was in elementary school, and I can't remember the name, but it was a very similar sort of thing. But instead of herding sheep, the pig could read.
Oh, sure. We were obsessed with pigs in the 90s, I guess. Mm-hmm. The book is called...
Kicked off a whole pig revolution.
Babe the Gallant Pig,
mm-hmm.
By Dick King Smith.
That's right.
That's all it is. And again, Shaun the Sheep is just as charming. The pigs are the bad guys in that. But, there was an animated Charlotte Webb movie in the 80s?
Somewhere around that time.
I mean, that movie to me feels like it was from the 60s and it just never aged a day. It's fine.
I remember the animation looks kind of similar to Watership Down, which is very, very freaky.
I was thinking Secrets of the Rats of Nim as well.
Yeah, yeah.
That kind of like poorly lit, as though Disney stole all the light bulbs, so it's not properly lighted. So we have this movie where essentially Babe, who has no name, it's just the name that the mother called all the piglets was Babe, right?
Yep.
Develops a sense of self as he's learning to herd everything. Like it's actually kind of a cute little story. Just honestly, we've done these kind of movies before where at the end we're both kind of, this is, I would almost argue, the definition of a feel-good movie.
It was charming. It was very charming. I don't know if I would want to, regularly watch it, but it holds up as a kid's movie.
Well, and again, at the end I felt good for having watched it. I enjoyed it thoroughly. I was very happy to have seen it again.
I did hate as a kid that scene with the farmer's grandchildren. Christmas, because that little granddaughter was such a bitch.
Well, and they're rat-faced little children. And I guess we can talk about that scene. There is a family, I guess it's the kids, right?
Yeah, it's the farmer's kids, and they bring
the grandkids.
The grandkids over.
Around Christmas, and this is the threat that the house cat brings up, right? That pigs are for eating.
Yes.
The
duck brings it up first. Ferdinand, the duck that keeps crowing like a rooster because, again, it wants to belong and stop itself from getting eaten.
Right. Although it works, which we can get to later. But effectively, these are all little vignettes. So the story overall, like Daniel alludes to, is this is a pig who doesn't feel like he belongs. The mother, Collie, essentially adopts him as a son,
mm-hmm.
and he learns how to herd sheep. That's the overarching storyline. The rest of it, though, comes into play in this kind of these little stories that grow him closer to the family, right?
Yeah.
So him learning how to say he endears himself to the family, right? And with the duck telling him that the people raise pig only to eat them,
mm-hmm.
it's essentially true. And so he is...
Well, that's even what the carnival barkers tell the farmer. Christmas Day, think of it, what a feast.
Right, and that's what the kids all want. The kids want to eat pig.
Not that whiny daughter. She hates pork, as she is quick to point out.
She's quick to point out everything. It's a very weird scene because they're uncharming characters in
a charming movie.
Yeah, and it's not even in a weird way because, for example, the wife also wants to eat the pig, but she ultimately, the scene at the end with the women's guild is probably the best. Yeah, we'll get there. But effectively, the rest of the movie is filled with normal, people who have flaws but are charming. So
mm-hmm.
they stick out like sore thumbs in this movie.
Well, there's also that weird scene where their gift to the farmer is a fax machine. And they're like, oh, technology, that's kind of odd. And I'm going, it has no place in this movie.
Well, and it's a very weird thing because it comes up six times and you're just kind of but why does it keep coming back up? What's the joke here?
Well, because maybe he uses the fax machine at the end to fax in the entry form. But that could have been done so many other ways.
You're right, but that was the joke. That was clearly what they thought the joke of the scene was, and I don't get it. I don't pretend to get it. It's fine. But whatever, Daniel. You're asking me, I'm explaining what the joke is. If I'm explaining the joke, it's not funny.
Yeah.
which is what we keep telling Matt, but he keeps showing back up.
Aww.
Oh, come on. So that's where we are on this. From here,
let's talk about the actual technology used with the animals and the voice cast, because you were all excited when you were texting. It's like, Daniel, that's Marty Sherman as Babe. And I'm listening to it, and it's like, oh, that's Lunch Lady Doris, and whoever J. Sherman's makeup woman was, is that one sheep.
Doris Grau. Yes. And you have this incredible cast we mentioned James Cromwell as Hoggett.
Hoggett.
His wife is played by...
Wait, it's a farmer named Hoggett in a movie about pigs. I just got that.
Hold on.
Connections are being formed, synapses are being fired, thoughts are happening, Nick.
Jokes are almost made. But Art Hoggett, Arthur Hoggett. Something I learned about him is that he is from L.A. This English accent is just something I guess he learned. So Hugo Weaving's Rex.
Oh, yeah. This was before he got big, too. He'd done, I think, Priscilla, Queen of the Desert and that, and a bunch of movies in Australia, but that he hadn't broken into the U.S. yet.
The woman who does the voice of Martin Prince... Russi Taylor is Duchess the Cat.
No.
Yeah. I mean,
that was Martin Prince?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Well, I mean, the reason why you didn't know is that she is more of a voice actress than Christine Cavanaugh, who's fine. I love Christine Cavanaugh, but she does a lot of the same voices over and over again, although I think she's since passed.
She did a couple years ago.
Yeah, but yeah, she was Dexter. She was...
She was Chucky.
Which are very distinct voices, but this is definitely Marty Sherman's voice, which... must have just gone off the air if this is 95, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's funny. She's also Bunny Babbot from Sonic the Hedgehog, so there you go, I guess.
I mean, it works. First, I'm glad that this was before that time when voiceover actors were, major Hollywood stars, and that was the whole gimmick, right?
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of talented ones out there that don't get, that are just now getting the recognition they deserve, and they really didn't for a while, but... I look on the Tribune and there's a picture of Christine Cavanaugh going to the Oscars, which is like, oh, that's cute.
Yeah, no, it makes these little things make me happy because these people are very talented. And, mm-hmm. Listening to Rob Paulsen's podcast, you get that feeling that they're like, oh, yeah, I mean, some actors can do it, but other times they just want someone who sounds like, The Rock or whatever. And
right.
That's fine, I guess. But like the woman who played what's her name? Fly.
Oh, the other sheepdog?
Yeah, the mother sheepdog, the one that Babe cozies up to, is Miriam Margolis, who is Professor Sprout from Harry Potter.
Yeah.
But, I mean, most of her other work is animated films. Like, that was just, she did some live acting, because there's 12 English actors, and they just come back around, so... and so I guess since James Cromwell wasn't English, I actually needed someone who was English. Or I guess Irish? Whatever he's supposed to be. Welsh?
I think it's supposed to be Northern England, but I mean, it was filmed in Australia.
And sure was.
The producer is the same guy that did the Mad Max movies, so
yeah.
Kind of a genre shift for him, but even so, Australia. Well,
he's done other kid movies, right? Like, he came back to Mad Max because he's like, kids movies are done. I did that. We're good. I'm just like, all right, whatever.
This is, I think, the first one that he really did, and I know he did those Happy Feet movies.
Yeah, Happy Feet was the one I was thinking. He also directed Happy Feet, if I recall correctly.
You're right.
I mean, I'm sure they're fine, man. But, like, Babe Pig in the City is kind of fun. This is...
The other good thing about how this works with the actors and the animals is, it's not just they're pasting CGI mouths onto moving dogs, which to me always looks freaky. They combine it with actual animals, with animatronics that I think Jim Henson's workshop did. Did I see that in the credits?
I'm going to take your word for it, because that's the kind of thing that they don't really put anywhere to verify. So I'm going to say yes.
All right. And some CGI with the mouths as well, but only for certain scenes. So it all works a lot better. And, I actually got the sense that these are animals talking instead of just, oh, great, it's another creepy Air Bud movie with puppies yapping like Clutch Cargo cartoons.
Well, I mean, or one of those really shitty ones like Santa Paws and like all those ones that aren't even really movies, because you're right, it's the cheapest of CGI effects.
Here, Junior, bright colors. If you watch this for 90 minutes, you won't make a sound while Daddy goes and gets his drink on, right?
Well, I mean, and the other side of this is this movie was expensive. So it's a risk. You know, it's a $30 million movie in 1995, which is not nothing, you know, 20 years ago now. It did gross $250 million, though.
Which, again, for the 90s was a
lot. Yeah, I mean, there aren't too many movies that do that well. And it's funny because, again, maybe it's that it's not a Disney film, but if this was another studio, they would be bringing this out constantly for, you know.
Well, there would have been like 10 Babe movies at this point. And the last after the second one would have all gone direct to video. And it's like, in this one, the pig is a detective now.
Well, and they would have cheapened and cheapened and cheapened and cheapened. But, like, again, I don't remember there being a 20th anniversary 2 years ago.
No.
I mean, like, there's not, like, a Blu-ray version everywhere. I got it on Vudu for $2. But, like, I'm glad I did. It's very enjoyable. The kids like it, you know. And it's a very good-hearted movie.
Did Naomi watch it with you?
Yeah, she was enjoying it. She liked the animals making sounds, and she was there with them. And the music is cute. You know, it's not weird. It's not out of place. It's all very subtle and very, there's a good sense of the world, right? And the fair at the beginning is cute. The competition at the end, which we're not even close to talking about yet, is also cute. So it's a nice little world that they develop. I don't know. I'm perfectly charmed by this.
Well, there's that whole social structure bit too that they develop with Rex talking about where all the animals belong, which, you know, flashes of Animal Farm there.
Yeah, flashes of Animal Farm, flashes of, like, getting racism kind of ingrained in kids young, which is good.
Well, that used to be Disney's MO for many years.
Oh, I mean, I remember Lady and the Tramp. It was crazy! A poor person eating dinner with a rich person! I guess it's also Trading Places. They made a sequel to that, didn't they? I'm sorry.
Trading Places?
No, Lady and the Tramp 2.
Oh, Disney's made a sequel to everything at this
point. Yeah, it's real a shame. It's a real crap fest. But we don't need to talk about the Disney Craft Fest. I don't know why that bothers me, but it does. So
you mentioned earlier that this was a vignette style movie, and then they have these little chapter divides with the little mice reading off the chapter title, which in retrospect I didn't like as much. It was kind of weird.
It's interesting. I don't know why they did it.
I guess to give it a more storybook feel,
and definitely to give it more of a break. Right, because the movie stops dead when they do it. Right, it cuts to a title scene and then a little kind of, it's almost like a wipe. Right, like they kind of zoom in very close on the mouse and it's a clearly animatronic mouse and it goes, "The pig wins again," or whatever it is. It's like a chapter title.
Well, there was that one where they're reading, "Court is a very sweet beak," and then they're giggling. I'm like, "Oh, good lord!"
Yeah, that was a bleak turn. And I mean, as you're kind of alluding to, there's these other kind of weirdnesses. The very ugly children who are zoomed in, like it reminds me of Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, actually.
Yeah. One of the grandchildren looks like Augustus Gloop.
He does. And then it's Christmas morning and the kid and the granddaughter doesn't get the house she wanted. It's not the one on TV.
I fast forwarded through that scene this time because it's like, I don't need that. That was just depressing.
Yeah, I don't need this is the way to put that.
Especially because there's those scenes of Puggett building it. And that's that. And that one bit starts getting destroyed where Babe's sneaking in to steal the alarm clock. It's like, you know, this is a nice little world. And again, I guess the whole point of that scene was like the new 90s fax beepers and crack world meeting with the old rural world. But it's like, you don't really need that in this movie.
Well, at least it's not ever addressed again, which is a weird thing to say because a dropped line like that would be otherwise very bothersome.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it was actually fine because it showed the world like, we're trying to understand why this guy also doesn't show emotions. And that's, I don't want to say it's an excuse, but it's a reason why he kind of checks out at times because people don't appreciate the effort he puts in for what he does. So, I mean, on one hand, it's kind of a cop-out that I'm even bringing this up. But on the other hand, I find him charming and I find the way he deals with it kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't remember him reacting at all in that scene.
He doesn't.
His wife does. Like, hug the girl, but, ugh.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing to bring up in a movie that generally has nothing but kind of positive, charming things to say about people. And this that in particular, that sequence is so weird. And I mean, it's followed up by Christmas dinner mm-hmm. where Puggett maybe, you know, I mean, with the duck telling him, you know.
That was funny. Her name's Roseanne.
Yeah. But he decides not to kill the pig, mm-hmm. and we don't really know why.
Maybe. Oh yeah, because he doesn't see the pig actually doing anything until he sees him lining up the chickens. And I don't know though. Well, originally when the pig comes, the fly has, you know, her litter, and then they all get adopted because that's just how it works with dogs.
Yeah.
And I don't know. After that, they start cozying up to each other. Was that before the Christmas bit? Or after?
It's around the same time. I'm getting my timeline confused because, again, these are vignettes and they kind of fit together.
They kind of blend together.
But, you know, even aside from that, you know, Christmas comes. He's supposed to kill an animal for the feast. He considers the pig. Maybe the pig is too small. Maybe whatever. At one point, he does make the comment to his wife that, you know, it has good haunches. By next year, it could win a prize at the county fair or something.
But still
like
that. In terms of eating it, if I recall.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. But still, you know, in the end, they decide to kill a goose that has personality, but is not the one that crows like a rooster. Right.
Ferdinand. Yeah, it's a different one.
And then, of course, the kids get to complain again. His son talks about getting them technology and modernizing because they aren't turning a profit. And then, if I recall, on Christmas morning, wasn't that when the guys are stealing sheep?
Yeah, that.
So essentially,
that's right, and that's it because the pig was out there along with
Fly. Yeah, and so Babe essentially saves the flock, mm-hmm. At least a part of the flock, because he starts freaking out and wakes Fly because he hears a commotion and sheep are being kidnapped.
Yeah.
Or sheep nap, whatever. Rustled. They're being rustled. That's mm-hmm. what it is. Sheep rustling.
Yeah.
So essentially, Babe works his way into the family. Hoggett starts getting the idea that he can train Babe to be a shepherding pig. And in so doing, Rex starts to get jealous.
Yep.
And they get into a fight. Rex bites Hoggett and bites Fly.
Rex attacks Fly and then bites Hoggett. And that was a reference I never understood as a kid when the vet's taking a look at Rex and then suddenly goes, in order to decrease his aggression, snip, snip, I can do it Tuesday. Like, is he getting a haircut, Mommy?
Yeah, right. Yeah, no, that's something that happened. They fix him. And
they sedate him, so, you know, Rex is on drugs for, like, the second act of the movie.
Oh, he's definitely, and they kind of keep zooming in, and he's just, which is funny.
Hugo Weaving grunting while trying to sound high is just
funny. Hugo Weaving is... I don't want to say he steals that part of the show because he doesn't have a lot to do. No one has a lot to do in this other than James Cromwell, honestly, and Christine Cavanaugh. But it is, they're all good in this, man. It's really hard to say anything bad about the cast. It's well cast. But anyway, once he's been fixed, there's another scene where like the sheep are being attacked and it turns out that it's what the sheep call wolves, which is just wild dogs.
I think it's all dogs, and just some of them are wild. So I thought wasn't that the same dogs that the sheep rustlers had?
I thought so, too, but apparently, Hoggett's going to put Babe down, going to shoot him.
Yeah.
Because once people learn how...
Oh, that was a great thing from the narrator, which I thought, for a while, I thought this was the same narrator that did Barry Lyndon, but it's not, and that disappointed me.
That would have been a weird choice.
But anyway, there's that line that the narrator goes where the Hoggett's taking him back with a gun. It's like, Babe had some recollection of shiny metal tubes dispensing tubes, so he could only dream of the surprise that this shiny tube that Hoggett had held for him. Like, yeah. Oh, God.
That was dark. But essentially, Hoggett was going to put him down because once an animal starts eating the livestock, that's what you do.
That's what it does.
And so Fly goes and talks to the sheep for the first time ever. And they say that it was actually dogs. And so Fly tries to stop Hoggett.
Saved us.
Oh, God, that's such a haunting voice. Just in time, what is it? The wife, whose name I forget, comes up. The actress is Magda someone.
Yeah.
Comes up and says...
there's wild dogs about.
And they attack the neighbor's dogs. Or they took out four of the Miller's dogs, or whatever the line is. Or four of the Miller's sheep. So... Yeah. Babe is actually shown to be, you know, a hero.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, the movie takes this weird turn.
That's when he becomes full on full in sheep pigging.
Yeah, he's allowed in the house. The cat attacks him, so the cat is kicked out. But the cat who sneaks back in says, "They're just fattening you up to eat you. What is the point of having you here?" Which is, like, really dark.
We already addressed that, though, earlier in the movie when they were talking about it with the duck. So why bring it back now?
Everything is being reestablished. I think that is one of the elements of it that makes it a kid's movie, right? You can't have any plot point be left alone for 10 minutes to just to make sure, right? But this is when full-on training goes on. Right. And just in time for the wife to be going to the women's guild meeting.
Oh, that was because she's what, like vice president of the treasury or something.
Yeah. Something, you know, just, and I mean, it's the joke later is that it's exactly five women and they go to a hotel somewhere to just drink, like drink tea and just be away from their husbands.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, they're not doing anything. There's not, but the big entertainment is to watch this sheep herding competition because that's apparently what they do. And, you know, the first woman we see, her husband kind of embarrass himself and the sheepdog, like
the sheepdog bites the sheep.
And that's a real shame. That's a real shame. That kind of stuff. On the other hand, you know, poor Doggett or Hoggett, who is completely unable to take care of himself. He has all the meals prepared for him for a week in advance.
For Fly as well.
And of course, the other side of this is he's trying to train Babe. Babe runs away because of what the cat says. This, of course, is followed by Babe coming to health just in time. Like, again, this is where it feels the most like a kid's book, where they find Babe in the morning. The vet comes out, says, if he doesn't eat, he's going to die. He eats. And then it's like, well, we can move you to the end of the day, but you have to be here by 3:30 on the dot. So they make it on time.
Oh, that flashback bit with where they find Babe, you know, they give the origin of Rex and why he's so grumpy.
Yeah, he's deaf as a post.
Even though he could perfectly hear up until then. I always thought it was more of a pride thing for him because now he'll never be champion dog or whatever.
Well, I mean, and they kind of explain it all the way, right? Both sides of it, right? Because eventually Rex also helps him. But They assumed in the training that he would have the same sheep at home because he can talk to those sheep listen to him. When they get there, it's different sheep. Everyone panics, except for James Cromwell, who has no idea what's going on, which is really funny because...
the judges panic.
And I looked at my wife and I'm like, well, this is literally, there's nothing in the rule book, right? And he's holding the rule book and then they have a meeting and they said, there's nothing in the rule book that says a pig can't be a herding dog.
But at least they say...
There's still actually tension, which they actually pull off, which good on them, man. Like, I keep expecting this movie to disappoint me, and there are some things that aren't as good as they could be, but it never craps out. Like, when the pig comes out, everyone laughs at him, right? They could cheer, they could jeer, they could do anything, but they actually act like people would act, which,
yeah,
credit where credit's due. That's good. Apparently, again, this is the part that feels most like a kid's book. There's a code word or a password, they called it.
Okay, this I didn't get at all.
Apparently there's a phrase that gets sheep to listen to other sheep.
Oh.
Who knows, man? It's apparently a call for the clan. They say clan of sheep, as though it's like a Scottish thing. But, right? I mean, whatever. Baram, you... This is from the... I remember the commercials for this. I also remember him singing Jingle Bells, which is... Remember, that was in the commercial too. But whatever.
And I remember.
Anyway, at the competition, Babe says the password, and so completely silently, the sheep follow his commands.
Yep.
And it's really funny because all the barking is gone, all the commands are gone. He just follows him around. They do the whole thing. They get a perfect score as a sheepdog.
It's really the Susan Boyle moment of sheep.
It is. And at the end, they get a standing ovation. And I forgot this, but the last line of the movie is, "That'll do, pig," which is very sweet. And James Cromwell does such a good job in this movie. So this was nominated for, I think, 6 Academy Awards. Do you know what it beat for visual effects?
Apollo
13. That blew my mind. I mean, and it was also nominated for Best Picture, and I forget what it won for Best Picture. I looked that
Braveheart.
Okay. another movie about English people.
Angrier English. Well,
a lot of
angry Scottish people.
Well, they were angry English people. They were killing the Scottish people. But of course, a lot of Americans playing Englishmen.
You know, it's ironic there because George Miller, the guy who wrote and produced this, gave Mel Gibson his start, and then they go head to head at the Oscars, and Mel Gibson wins.
As a director as well, right?
Yeah.
He directed Braveheart.
Yes, he did.
No. But we've talked long enough about this, with all of my ums still intact. What do you think?
It's charming. I mean, again, it's what I think kids' movies aren't really as much anymore. I mean, even Pixar is kind of getting away from that, where the people actually care about making a decent movie that they'll connect to. And
no.
These days, they'll just slap a talking mouth onto an animal and call it a day. But this actually took the time to build a believable kids' world about talking animals, which I admired. So I don't know if I'll ever watch it again just on my own, but I'm not sorry that I did today.
And I was going to agree with you, of course. I, as you guys have heard, I found this movie extremely charming. But more than that little bit of charm that I found, I thought it was just well constructed. You know, this is kind of in the doldrums of Disney. Like, this is the year that Toy Story came out and Pixar started surpassing Disney across the board.
Yep.
And that's what Disney was guilty of, making heartwarming movies that at the end were nothing, right? You know, that the kind of family movies that you would go on Christmas Day that wouldn't be worth a damn.
Well, it was more to get the kids merchandising, excited for the whatever Happy Meal toy that they were made that had the tie-in at the time. And I'm sure Babe had some of that, but I don't really remember there being Babe talking stuffed animals.
Well, I mean, and like this is Bill. I guess the apex of that bullshit is like that Atlantis movie or the DreamWorks movie, Road to El Dorado. You know, just movies that just don't do anything. I think this movie tried something, and it was fun. I'd recommend it again. I don't know, what's worth in the long run, but I really enjoyed it. I think it deserved its Academy nods. It was definitely kind of one of those movies that got a nod for trying something that just hadn't been done before, which is a high quality everything about a kids movie, right? Yeah. Like it's not in the same way that Beauty and the Beast did, but it's in the way that like a lot of these I mean, there's just a lot of talking animal movies. I don't know what it is about us that we like talking animal movies, but there you go. I guess I should give a hint for our next one. Next week, of course, when this comes out, is going to be a little bit different. Next week is Valentine's Day, and I'll just throw it out this way. We have a very appropriate movie for Valentine's Day, okay? And technically, it was released 30 years ago in December, but this is its 30th anniversary year, so we appropriately did it. So stay tuned next week and every future week when you put another piece of your past on trial. Thanks, guys.
Who, me? Yeah, follow me. Oh, boy, are you in for some fun.
Psst. Hey, you. Do you like the Tales from the Crypt series? Do you like spooky things in general? Then check out the Good Evening Kitties podcast. That's Good Evening Kitties Podcast. GOODEVENINGKIDDIES Podcast. Each week, I'll review a new episode from the TV series The Tales from the Crypt. Find me on Podbay, Podbean, or iTunes. That's the Good Evening Kitties Podcast. Check it out today.
Myopia Defender Childhood is a member of the ESO Network and produced by Dude Letter Podcasting. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman. It is edited by Nick Hoffman and Candace Burns. The theme song is Caroline by The Serenaders, and their music is available on Amazon. Please rate and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcast. And tune in next week when we put another little piece of your past on trial. Thanks! We'll be right back.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.